This is part two of the interview with Kate Hamlin. Do you participate in open houses?
I do. I do not believe that it's what sells listings, and I have that conversation to set expectations with my sellers up front. I personally believe every 6 to 8 weeks is plenty for the frequency of open houses, and I generally kind of gauge what my sellers' wants and desires are before I dive into any sort of set schedule on open houses for my listings. I do think that they're a good tool to pick up new buyers, and I'm honest about that with my sellers, that, you know, most likely what this is going to be are people that haven't chosen an agent yet, the neighbors down the street that are curious about your property, tire kickers, you know, people that just really love to look at property after church on Sunday and they don't really ever have any intention of buying, but this is kind of their pastime. We have some of those that come through open houses. You know, probably 15% of the people that come through houses are going to be people that eventually convert purchase in this price range, in this neighborhood. And, you know, the likely buyer, in my personal opinion, if they're ready, willing, and able, they're going to have a realtor. And if they have a realtor, they're going to schedule a time to look at the property when it's not an open house. So I don't think it's a good tool for selling a property, but I think it's a mildly good tool for picking up new clients depending on your personality type. We have agents that pick up tons of new clients at open houses because they're bubbly and they're cheery and they make you their best friend within 30 seconds of you walking through that door. I personally am more of a person that if I was to enter an open house, I would rather be left alone. I want to look at the home. If I have questions, I'll approach you. And so I try and be warm and friendly when people come into an open house, but I don't think my personality type is conducive to picking up successful, good generation of leads at an open house.
So I have to ask the follow-up question. If it's not selling the home, and if you're not generating buyers, why do the open houses?
I don't do them frequently, but I have successfully picked up clients in the past, and I have on probably 1 to 5% of the time actually sold a home because of an open house. So there is that possibility, and I think that it's good for me to step outside of my comfort zone and learn how to be a better open house host to be able to pick up leads. Other agents in my market can successfully do it, and so I just need to find that niche that I can be successful to. And I never, ever am going to be successful if I don't keep trying.
Do you provide showing feedback to your sellers?
I do a manual follow-up on all showings that occur. So we have the Supra eKey lockbox system that I'm assuming most other agents across the country use. They're a blue lockbox that goes on, and your software that you either have on a separate device or on your phone has to get updated every 24 hours. So whoever opens the lockbox, it records who that was, and I have it set up so that it automatically emails me when a showing happens, and I follow up via email 95% of the time and occasionally a phone call, depending on how well I know that agent and if I need to talk to them about anything else. So whenever I email out to that agent asking for feedback, I blind carbon copy my client so they see that I have followed up. And then I generally just forward that response without adjusting anything. I don't soften the blow. I don't harshen the blow. I just forward that feedback directly to my client, and then we communicate further about that. And, you know, if there's an odor that needs to be remediated, or if there's a price discussion that we need to have because we've had 6 or 7 comments based on price, it's a good tool to open that conversation with.
Let's move forward. Say you've successfully negotiated a contract on one of your listings. I assume that there's an inspection that happens and thereafter an inspection negotiation. During those inspection negotiations, how are those going for you? Do you have a certain technique that you use?
I wouldn't say that I have a specific technique that I use. I just listened to an online class a couple of weeks ago about negotiations, and I'm a pretty neutral negotiator. I would say. If something comes in and I'm representing a seller, an inspection generally gets done, yes, by a buyer. The buyer pays for it. The buyer gets with the buyer's agent, outlines the few points, sometimes several points, that are bothering them. We call them deal breakers, but they identify what's bothering them. They send us a notice saying we would like to either terminate the transaction or we would like to negotiate the transaction. If they choose to negotiate, which they do 95% of the time, then they give us the steps they want us to take to remediate that. So I simply go through and talk about the pros and the cons with my sellers. Every seller handles that conversation a little bit different. Some are very, very offended and get angry and like to yell. Others are scared that the whole thing's going to fall apart, and they just have fear as their response. But generally speaking, I just go through them item by item and say, you know, I see this on a lot of homes, or gosh, this is a new one. What can we do to solve this problem? They're asking us for this. And I just ask my seller, how do you feel about this list that they gave you? Are you comfortable fixing these? You know, they've asked for us to have these things solved in this manner. And if you're uncomfortable with that, maybe we can suggest it in this manner over here. And so I just help them work through it. Sometimes they need to sleep on it and settle down overnight. And it's okay for them to be mad or offended. We just go at it the next day and work through the issues and respond accordingly. So I don't know as though I have a specific tactic other than what does my seller feel is going to be the best for them. It's their home. It's their money. I can't tell them how they need to spend it. However, I can give them expertise and knowledge on who to call, what it might cost, if it's normal or not, and to decide if this is something that the next buyer is also going to ask for, or is this a very unusual thing that's specific to this buyer, in our opinion. So we just kind of go through the pros and the cons and work through it.
Do most of your inspection negotiations end with the work being done or with some type of cash settlement or concession?
I would say probably 20% of it ends with a cash settlement, and 80% of the time it ends with the work being completed.
Do you ever try to preempt these issues by having a pre-listing inspection?
No. I have suggested it in the past, but generally speaking, a seller, in my experience, whenever I've brought this up, a seller is not excited about spending the money to have that inspection done, especially if they're in a position where they're not willing to fix anything that might come up. So it's not a common practice in our region, I guess I would say, or at least in the Billings area, it's not common to have a seller inspection done in advance. Probably only 2% of the listings have that. More frequently, if somebody has an inspection, it's because they had a buyer and the buyer did an inspection and they couldn't negotiate through it and they have the inspection left over. And so that's probably more common.
Do you ever recommend that your sellers purchase a home warranty during that listing phase?
No. Warranties are very much a rare case in our region. I don't know why we're different than a lot of other marketplaces, but I have found as a listing agent especially that if a buyer comes from certain specific other regions, and California is one of them, it's unheard of for that buyer to purchase a home without a home warranty. They think it's absurd. It's very much out of the norm for them to think about not having a warranty. But here in our marketplace, it's very uncommon to have a warranty. I believe that the agents in our area, with the exception of a few, are biased, have had a negative experience, feel like you're paying for something that you won't really get a benefit out of. I personally don't have that opinion, but that's the talk that I have heard around town, is that, you know, you pay $400 for a home warranty, and if something happens, not only do you pay a deductible, but frequently they won't fix it anyway because they have a clause in there that says, no, I'm sorry, this isn't covered. So I think there's a kind of a general negative attitude about the home warranties in my region. Whether or not they're warranted, I don't know.
Do you attend your closings?
I do.
Do you do anything special for your client at the closing?
I generally always get them some sort of a gift that's personalized to them and their family, as well as a card and congratulatory hug. Generally speaking, we know each other well enough for that at the end.
Do you ask for testimonials from these folks?
My office does send out a feedback form and asks for a testimonial video, and if they're comfortable with that being published to Facebook, etc. So I personally do not ask for a testimonial, but my office asks for it for me at the same time they're asking for feedback on that form. So there's several different areas that they ask to assess: our knowledge of the market, our knowledge of the contract, our professionalism, our accessibility, if they would use us again, if they would recommend us to a friend, and then there's some open areas to discuss. How is your experience with our office staff, and do you have anything that you'd like to comment about this particular agent? And then, of course, at the bottom, it asks, are you comfortable giving us a video testimonial, and can we use your name and your comments in our marketing? And so it's a pretty comprehensive one piece of paper that they send out after closing.
And have you received testimonials from that?
I have.
And you've been able to use those in your marketing?
Yes, I have one on my landing page for my website and have used it on Facebook as well. In fact, it's tied into my listing presentation. So, yes, I have used those effectively.
Let's shift gears and talk about buyers for a minute. Why would a buyer hire you?
I personally believe that there's two reasons, possibly three, where I stand out above and beyond many of my competitors. I'm very accessible, almost to a fault. I'm available whenever my clients need me at the time that they would like, whether that's 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning or 9 o'clock on a weeknight or weekend. I try and be available to my clients whenever they need me. I am quick to respond to text, email, phone calls for my clients and kind of really tailor myself to them. I don't have children, and my husband and I are very independent, so I'm able to be there for them when they need me. The second is I do have a higher degree of education than many of my compatriots, and so I'm able to use that to analyze things possibly a little bit better. I'm very good at math and statistics, and so if they ask me, gosh, what should I offer on this property, I'm able to walk them through the multiple lists successfully and say, well, here's what the average has been, here's what the low has been, here's what the high has been, and we can make that an educated decision instead of just either an off-the-cuff answer or no answer at all. I try and keep it professional but fun. You know, buyers, I love working with buyers. It's my favorite part of this business. Generally speaking, buyers are more bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and they're excited about what they're doing, generally speaking. Whereas selling is more stressful. It's a hurry-up-and-wait process. Generally speaking, what you hope you're going to get, you don't get. It's a more stressful situation. But buyers hold more of the power, in my personal opinion. Especially right now, we're in a buyer's market, but buyers are fun. Buyers are fun to work with, and so I would say that's what makes me more competitive than the rest of my competition.
Do you try to qualify your buyers over the phone, or do you try to set an appointment to sit down with them?
I prefer to set up an appointment to sit down with them, but it depends on their urgency level, I would say. If they want to know what properties are available right this second and they can't meet until next week, we'll have a phone conversation and I'll try and schedule an appointment to follow up and meet with them face to face. If they're calling and it's just a general inquiry, I'm thinking about maybe buying eventually, they don't seem to be in a big hurry, then I will schedule an appointment to meet face to face. Ask them if they want to be set up on an automated search. Give them some tools that if they want to do some homework in the meantime, they have some available to them, but really do the bulk of the chat face-to-face.
I assume before you take them out to look at property, you qualify them for motivation and also financing. Do you use a lender to help you with the qualifying on the financing, or do you do that yourself?
I definitely use a lender. My personal experience is it's good to get them with somebody that they can start building a rapport with, as well as the rules just change so frequently. I feel like it's not my place to try and sit down and determine ratios with them and what the best product is going to be, because I might not know that there's a product out there that fits them, and the lender might be able to qualify them when I might think that they're not qualifiable.
Do you try to introduce that lender before you go out and look at any property, or does it happen afterwards?
Ideally, I love to get them at least on the phone with a lender and get that pre-approval letter in their hand before we go out. My success rate in having that actually occur way lower than what I want. But I always try and be friendly but persuasive in asking for that phone call to occur.
So you'll take a buyer out if they have not spoken with the lender yet?
I will at least once.
Do you practice buyer agency in your market?
We do, but in our market, it's general to have that agency, well, established, I guess I would say. The buyer broker frequently is not signed in our marketplace until an offer is being written. And so we've been criticized by several instructors from across the country that, in essence, we're acting as if we have open listings because our buyers are not signed with us. However, it's very uncommon in our market to sign that buyer brokerage prior to making an offer on a property.
Do you have a pre-buyer package that you send out to the buyer before you get together?
No.
You do or you don't have a presentation you make to a buyer before you start showing property?
I do not have a presentation. I've thought about making one. I've sat down with that intent. I started making a checklist to as you mentioned earlier, determine motivation, needs, just really kind of have a formal process that I go through instead of having it be a more informal discussion where I just glean information. I have not been able to successfully create something that I feel is good quality that has good information on it, whether it be for a buyer presentation or a checklist. I've been struggling with that since March, to be honest. So I'm not sure if I'll ever get that developed or not into an effective strategy for either a checklist or presentation, but I'm attempting, let's put it that way.
When you talk in your first conversation with the buyer, do you have a list of questions that you want to get through with them, or are you just winging it?
I guess my experience gives me, you know, more on a subconscious level. I know what topics I want to cover, but they're not written down anywhere.
So it's very open.
It's very open.
Do you have a system to help a buyer find a home?
Not anything more extravagant than what our multiple list provides. As I mentioned, I can set them up on a multiple list search. And so I can ask them, what part of town do you want to be in? What's the minimum number of bedrooms, bathrooms, square footage, garage number? You know, we can specify a tremendous amount of qualifiable information in our multiple list for them to try and narrow down what they want for their home search. We can do that either by drawing shapes on a map and searching that way, which I find to be less reliable because the information is only as good as the person who's inputting the information into the multiple list, or I find it more effectively to just choose what area of town, which it's a numbered system. 1 through 10 is Billings metro area, so if somebody's interested in living in downtown Billings, for instance, that would be area 6. And so I find it more effective to search by area that way than by map. But we set them up on an automated search, and they can choose to get those listings as soon as they hit the market. They can choose to get them daily, or they could choose to get them weekly or every 2 weeks, even if they wanted. Most everybody signs up for as soon as possible so that they can see that change as soon as it hits our marketplace, whether it be a status change, a price change, a new listing, an expiration, etc. So that's the most effective way that I have. I also give them my website where they can do a little bit more investigative work if they feel like maybe they want to look into something outside of that criteria that we set up, and they're not quite sure if they want to call me to make those changes to their search yet or not. And, you know, let's face it, buyers like to be more interactive with the process than just waiting for an email to show up. I also have an availability to, my website provides me an IDX website that I can give to people to search on their mobile phones, which is a pretty cool product. It's not brandable yet, but if they go to katehamlin.com/mobile and they're in the Billings area multiple list location, they're able to type that in with their phone, go to their browser, and then if they pull up to a home, for instance, and it doesn't have to just be a Century 21 listing, but anything that's in the MLS, they can type in the address, they can read the description, view all the photos, see all of the data that's entered into the multiple list, like how big the lot size is, the square footage of the home, etc. They can see all of that right on their handheld device, whether it's a tablet or a phone. And so that's a pretty useful tool that I am able to give my buyers as well.
Well, you seem pretty well organized. Do you have systems and checklists, say when a listing comes in or when a buyer comes in, to make sure you don't miss anything?
Just my little brain power. No, I do not have any systems or checklists in place.
Time management. How do you keep control of your time?
Gosh, that's a fantastic question. I think the best answer that I can give you is I really do utilize my online calendar that interfaces not just with my laptop, but also my phone and my iPad. And I'm able to very effectively schedule appointments and time to get in between appointments. I can see exactly what's going on for my day and plan accordingly. As far as if you're looking to have an answer that includes, you know, do you have life balance? What do you do for extracurricular type activities, and what percentage of time do you do that versus work? I don't know as though I have a good answer for that.
Do you have balance in your life?
You know, sometimes I have way too much balance in my life. The unfortunate part about being in real estate, as I'm sure you're aware, is sometimes you're busy and sometimes you're not. And so I find that occasionally I take too much business and don't have enough personal life time, but those times are pretty rare. And so I will welcome them with open arms when they happen, much more so than the opposite, for when the phone seemingly just stops ringing altogether. I do try and keep a pretty healthy life balance. I really love to dance, and I have at least a once a week commitment for that, for a couple of hours that I try and stick to whether I'm busy at work or not, and just work around it as if it's any other appointment that I have on my calendar. And similarly speaking, my husband and I have a date night that, you know, at 7:30 every Wednesday night, almost without fail, that's our time together. And occasionally, if something comes up where we really need to move it to a Thursday or a Tuesday, we will. But we really do try and dedicate at least one night per week to spend together so that we don't get too far distance apart.
How many hours do you think you work in a typical week?
Oh, goodness. You know, it varies drastically. This winter, the phone all but stopped ringing altogether. It was a very scary period of my career. I would have paid to work at that point. You know, right now, the last couple of weeks have been unusually busy for me, and I've probably been putting in 14-hour days, 6 or 7 days a week. I don't even know how many hours that adds up to, and I'm afraid to multiply it out, to be honest. But generally speaking, I do have a much more balanced career. I would say between 30 and 60 on any given week is probably what I normally put in during a period where I am producing my normal kind of 29 to 30 to 35 transactions. That's been a very standard number for me over the years.
Do you have a business plan?
I have sat down and attempted to make a business plan in the past because I've been on committees and gosh, I guess I would just call it a team where we went out and helped people sit down and make business plans. But I find that when I think of a business plan, I think of something that would make a business bankable. you know, you could take it to the bank, you can get a loan because of it. And I find in real estate that it's almost impossible for me to write a business plan like what I would consider a business plan from a school of business type of standpoint. But I do write down goals each year for how am I going to increase my business, how am I going to keep a life balance. You know, from that standpoint, yes, I have plans and goals, but I'm not sure I would effectively call it a business plan.
Do you track your numbers? Do you have a system for tracking numbers? If so, what kind of metrics do you like to monitor in your business?
I used to be the tracking queen with my Excel spreadsheets. It was a little bit ridiculous, to be perfectly honest. I would put in each new contract that I had, and I would have each listing have its own line, the price of the listing or the price that the contract had been agreed on, the date that it was supposed to close. I would then, you know, multiply out what the contribution to Century 21 Corporate was going to be, what the contribution to my local franchise was going to be, what my commission income was going to be. I would track all of those things. I would also track, is this a family that I'm helping? Is this a single male? Is this a single female? Is this a couple? Are they white collar? Are they blue collar? I tracked a lot of information. And I found after about 4 years of tracking that there wasn't a lot to be learned because I don't really help one market segment any more than I help the others. So there wasn't really an effective marketing plan that I could extract out of all of that tracked data. I evaluated how many times I was a listing agent, how many times I was the selling agent, how many times I was a dual agent. There didn't appear to be any notable information in that. I even compiled all of this data and gave it to an actual advertising agency and said, please help me take these numbers and formulate them into something that I can do effectively with my marketing. And they looked at me like I was insane and they said, we have Fortune 500 companies that don't track their business as well as this. And I said, well, great, then help me do something with it. And they said, well, we don't really know what to do with it. It's the problem because in real estate, I'm not sure how to help you. So I tried that method for a long time and, you know, it was good to know how many closings have I had year to date. And so I could kind of see when my business was starting to slow down more than just by kind of a gut check, you know, oh gosh, I've got 3 or 4 in escrow right now versus, gee, I have 15 in escrow. But the tracking wasn't really helping me. So I kind of just left that to my office to track instead of using my super nerdy Excel spreadsheet that I had built. And the office tracks how many closings we've had in the last 6 months. And the office tracks my expenses and the office tracks my income. And I've just kind of left that to be one of the things I don't need to be quite as neurotic about anymore.
Let's talk about motivation, goals, the mental game. What drives you?
Helping somebody successfully meet their real estate goal is what drives me, especially on the buying side. I love, love, love to see a buyer smiling at the closing table and having them love the property that they're in and never, ever wanting to leave and having it be a really, truly good fit for them and for their life. I try not to work on a transactional basis, if that makes any sense. I don't want to sell somebody a home just because I want to sell a home. I want to sell somebody a home because it's the right thing for them in the phase of life that they're in. If I think that a year or two or five from now, it's going to be a bad decision financially or emotionally or for whatever reason, I'm going to advise them of that up front. I would rather have them be happy in an apartment than an upset homeowner in the future if they already know what their goals are. And so I try and fit that our market data into what their needs and expectations are, and meeting that successfully just really makes me tick.
Well, Kate, putting the needs of your client before your own explains why you've been so successful. You've combined your analytical skills, your networking talents, and your passion to meet your clients' expectations into a powerful magnet that draws business to you. Your father would be proud of you, and I'm grateful to know you. Thank you again for being our Rising Agent of the Month.
You've been listening to the Mastermind Agent Interview of the Month Club, where top agents, rising agents, team members, and guests from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the club interviews at www.mastermindagent.com.